Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
This is Internet Marketing. Brought to you by Site Visibility at sitevisibility.com. This is Internet Marketing, and today I'm joined by John Selwood, Head of New Business, and Emily Mace, Head of SEO at Open Digital. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Morning.
First of all, as normal, tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do at Oban Digital.
So I'm head of new business at Oban Digital. I've been with Oban for about 2.5 years now. My background wasn't always working in agency, but it has always been working in international digital campaigns. My background predominantly in financial services, so leading the international arm of Lloyds TSB, as it was back in the old days, and left there for something a little more fulfilling, working with the guys at Oban, really, just purely down to the interest in what they were doing around culture and applying that to modern e-commerce strategies.
And I'm the head of SEO at Oban, and I've been here for just over a year. I was brought in to head up the international SEO strategy for Oban, and I've got about 18 years experience working in digital, so it's nice for me to be able to, like John, apply that to a international market, which is slightly more challenging than just doing it for the UK.
Fantastic. Okay, so we're going to be talking about the importance of culture in digital marketing. Let's start off with localization, because I know that's very important, isn't it, in terms of culture and digital marketing?
Unbelievably important, Andy. I think a lot of the decisions we make within our own domestic campaigns, whether or not we're from the UK or the US, are largely driven by our own experiences of how we operate within our own cultural boundaries. And a lot of the time we kind of make those decisions on autopilot because we're here living and breathing it. I think probably one of the most important things for people to understand when they're operating cross-border is that a lot of the things we take for granted in how we operate and how we communicate and those strategic or even tactical decisions we make based on our own sort of heuristics or known behaviors of a group here in the UK or the US will change as soon as we go cross-border. And one of the interesting things about culture is it is not just about language. And that's really what we try and instill really with our clients is that, you know, an international campaign isn't just about the language. It's much more about the culture of the people that you're trying to target. And ultimately, it comes down to people. As soon as we get our head around the fact that people are different everywhere in the world, then we need to reflect our behaviors, particularly in the digital space, to match the behaviors of those we're trying to influence or engage with.
Now, getting the technology right is something you talk about a lot. What's the best approach, and are there some common mistakes to avoid?
So getting the technology right is such an important part of everything that we do when we're helping people reach out to new markets, because if you're not targeting specific languages or specific users in the right way when you reach out to them, potentially what you could do is actually miss that audience. So one of the things that we see quite regularly is people have implemented a language application on their website, which adds a nice little query string to the end of the URL, for example, lang type or something like that, which is great from a database perspective in the back end of a website. But from a search engine's perspective, all you're doing is confusing them because, in effect, what you're not doing is giving them a clear indication. So we recommend, you know, doing things like having a subfolder with the name of the country in it, for example, /DE for the German market.
Yeah.
And what that does is you can actually then go to Google and say, oh, hey, this folder, /DE, is for all the German people who want to come and view my website. So getting that right is really important. And there's also a tag called an hreflang tag. And we've seen quite a few instances where people have not implemented that correctly. And in effect, Google starts to get confused then about the targeting of a website as well, because people are using language codes as country codes or vice versa. A really good example I saw just recently was a website was targeting Arabic as a language. And in the hreflang tag, they'd referenced AR-AR, which to their mind was Arabic for Arabic people. Thank you very much.
Yes.
But actually what they were doing with that was targeting the Argentinian country.
Oh.
And within the Argentinian country, Arabic speakers.
Right.
There's not that many of those. So they were missing their targeting, really. So one of the things that we do when we start a campaign is just look at the international technical setup to make sure that all of that is kind of going in the right direction, because you could spend a lot of money getting your localization done, doing all of this beautiful translation, making sure you're talking to people in the way that you want to. But if you're telling the search engines that you want to target Arabic speakers in Argentina, not so much.
Yeah, they're always confusing those language codes, aren't they? Because you get this hyphen and then another bit on the end that sort of like hones it down a bit more. I guess there's places online where you can check those, aren't there?
Yeah, there are. There's a really nice resource that Google actually put out, which has got a list of the country and language codes. They're all based on the ISO codes. So if you go into the Google Webmaster Tools help section, you can see a reference there. The core thing to remember is that the first code that you put in is the language, and the second code that you put in is the country. So if you want to target Arabic speakers, AR would be the language and it would come first. But if you want to target speakers in Egypt, you would use the Egyptian code at the end of the URL. So it would be AR-EG.
And it is a dash, isn't it? Because I've seen so many times people use underscores and come to grief.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And we've seen all sorts of things like that as well. We've also seen people trying to claim that there is a language that doesn't exist. For example, I saw one recently, which was somebody was trying to target the Austrian market, and they'd actually decided that Austrian was a language rather than using German as a language. So
right.
They were targeting the country and language of Austria. Obviously that was confusing the search engines as well, because obviously they were looking for DE as the language there.
Languages, I don't know. So from a cultural perspective then, just changing tax slightly, how should we identify which markets to go into?
So, I mean, this needs to be targeted. There's going to be a couple of clues that you're already going to be aware of. And I think one of the main important things to say is that typically, unless you're the rare type of company that is capable, already has a global footprint, already has global resources, don't try and do everything all at once. It's very possible you've taken the last 2, 5, 10, 20 years to build up your presence in a market that you already understand how people behave in. You know, it's quite a rare situation where you'll be able to launch globally in one sitting. So we try and encourage people to sort of take it in bite-sized chunks, really. Understand much more about that market first. In terms of picking markets or choosing which markets, there's a really good chance that you're already going to be getting traffic and orders from a particular market already, or a couple of different markets. Obviously, looking at your analytics, looking at your data in your CRM will give you a good clue as to where you're currently finding that your products or your services has some level of need in that market.
Mm.
And then really from there, there's the same process that you would typically follow, that you probably followed in the UK when setting up the business in the first place. You know, research that market, research the people, research the competitors. And just be absolutely realistic about what your rate of growth is going to be, especially if you haven't got the brand behind you that perhaps you've got in the UK. We see this time and time again where we have a very well-respected or well-known brand in the UK that automatically believes that brand equity will follow them into a new market where there are existing local competitors where people would rather deal with. So I think, you know, being realistic in terms of expectations is one thing. Secondly, you know, just understanding how the local people behave. You know, in the German market, people do prefer to go with national suppliers or people where they've got a presence on their high street, particularly in retail. Similarly, you know, understanding what is it that they can do to beat that competition? What does their service offer in that market, whether that's from a product or a price basis or a service level? How can they possibly improve on what the local competition are already offering? And a lot of the research that we do is typically about trying to find that sweet spot or that gap analysis, really, in terms of what users really want, how that company that we're working with can actually meet that need better than the competition, and how the competition are meeting that need as well. And that gap in between where competitors aren't hitting the mark for local people in that market and where our client can, that's where we really want to be focusing our activity, either through paid search or content or essentially just brand positioning and tone of voice.
So once you've identified these markets, then what's the sort of the best way to set up the sites for those markets?
There's no silver bullet, I'm afraid.
I suspected that might be the answer.
What we'd always recommend, you know, once you have a really good understanding of, you know, how people are behaving with competitors and how they're talking about a product or service, then it really follows much of the same pattern of setting up domestically. The decisions that you're making about your domestic and the effort that you're putting into meeting your domestic consumers' needs should be the same whether you're targeting China or Germany or France or anywhere. There are going to be technical considerations. I think Emily talked about some of those earlier. Again, there's no silver bullet. So things like domain strategy, it doesn't follow a best practice. From an SEO point of view, there are pros and cons of going with a folder or a subdirectory or a wholly owned country coded top level domain. A lot of it will depend on the individual market, their needs and wants in terms of identifying with a URL that is already in that market, and also, more importantly, what the competition are doing. So the first step we'd also always say, once you've got the research out of the way, is really about making sure that the site is speaking to your customers in the right way. Mm. So localization, very good translation. From a search perspective, we tend to think that just translating or replicating what you've got in the UK is nowhere near good enough. Translation certainly has a place, and good translation is a great skill, and finding a good translation agency is really important. However, in terms of translating things like...
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Your keyword strategy or your content strategy and just replicating it from one market to another really isn't going to cut the mustard. So looking at that through the eyes of your customers in those markets is the key, really, in terms of understanding how people are researching and buying products.
Yeah, I see this so often, actually. I think a lot of people don't fully grasp the difference between translation and localization, do they? Like, you know, you can translate a sentence into another language, but you have to also understand the culture and the way that people phrase things. Like, there are certain languages that don't have corresponding words, aren't there?
Yeah, I mean, that's very true. And some of the research that we've been doing for our clients has thrown up some really interesting differences in how people search. So an example that we found recently when we were doing some keyword research into how people search for news internationally was in the Indian market, there was a really high search volume for the English term Hindi news. And what people were doing in the search results there were they were searching in English for the term Hindi news, but then they were wanting to consume content on a website that was giving them news in the Hindi language. So they were actually doing a hybrid behavior, searching in one language but consuming content in another. Whereas if you just did, you know, straight translation, you would miss that opportunity. And it was actually a five-fold increase in search volume for the Hindi translated version of Hindi news to the much, much higher searched Hindi news in English. So, you know, we were able to unlock a much higher search potential just by not using direct translation.
Yeah.
The other thing to notice is, you know, we have all sorts of English colloquialisms that fall into our everyday language. I think as soon as you begin translating that, there is either not going to be a direct translation or, worst case scenario, is it translates as something that's wholly inappropriate. And there's a huge potential there for damaging your brand, or at least being one of those embarrassing translation blooper stories. So, I mean, at best, you're just simply going to miss the mark and not engage properly with your audience. At worst, you potentially risk making yourself look a little bit silly in a particular market.
I'm sure there's a thousand stories of translation bloopers, but sadly, we haven't got time for those.
You can look those up. There are plenty online.
Now, what about content and social strategies across the world? How does that work?
So one of the things with content strategy, and this is kind of one of the content marketing worst kept secrets, is actually content marketing works in much the same way from market to market. Because what you're doing with a content strategy is identifying a need with your audience to consume a piece of content, whether that's an English audience or a French audience or an Arabic audience, it doesn't really matter. If they've got a need, you're addressing it with your content. Now, one of the things you have to appreciate when you are rolling these content and social strategies out is that how people can consume content might be different. There may be a higher bias towards using mobile devices. People may have a higher bias towards consuming videos rather than text-based content. And also, when you're looking at social sharing, one of the big mistakes that we see UK companies doing is actually just reaching out and going, well, hey, I've got Facebook, I've got Twitter, I've got LinkedIn, tick, 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 I'm done. I can just roll out to all of these countries. Mm. And if I'm posting things in the correct language, jobs are good. I've targeted those markets. But when you go into different markets, there's different search engines. For example, there's Zing in Germany, which is very popular. And then obviously when you're going out into other markets such as China, you've got a completely different social landscape there. Yeah. So you have to take those things into consideration rather than just going, well, you know, I've got all my big profiles, I'm just going to roll those out.
I think one of the on the social elements in China, we see this probably on a weekly basis. The number of times we see UK or US companies targeting China with a specific Chinese page, but still including the icon to Facebook and Twitter, which aren't actually allowed in the Chinese market, is probably one of the biggest sort of errors that we see. So again, there are different platforms all around the world, and there are different usage of those. So things like Sina, for example, or WeChat, these platforms engage people in different ways, and they all have different needs. So much in the same way we sit wondering about how to engage with domestic clients, ones that we all know and understand, the same rigor needs to be put into understanding how people are using local search, local social or content sharing platforms.
Now, actually, you just mentioned about certain things that you shouldn't do in certain cultures. Can you give us some specific sort of cultural conversion considerations, some good examples?
Yeah, there's a million and one examples of sort of people who aren't necessarily doing it right. It all comes down to local knowledge, I'm afraid. Again, there's no sort of magic book that will tell you everything that you need to know. We do a lot of work in terms of cultural conversion here at OBAN. There are all sorts of elements that play into it, some of which come from very sort of cultural or religious background. So there was a great case study where IKEA had a picture in one of their catalogs or on one of their brochureware sites of a family in a bathroom that was actually produced from most of the Western cultures. However, when it went out to the Saudi Arabia market, they had airbrushed the lady out because it was just the father and the son left in the bathroom alone. Right. Within that market, having a female in the bathroom at the same time as father and son would be highly inappropriate. Similarly, things like consideration for, you know, Sharia mortgages, for example, you know, perhaps taking the site down at prayer times is one thing that we've seen actually be required. Not doing that, again, would potentially cause offence. On a different level, really, sort of, you know, colours, layouts, etc., tone of voice, all of this has an impact on how people consume content or view a web page, and naturally will have an impact on conversion. So we've done quite a few studies into colour analysis, and more importantly, sort of national colours. And some of the tests that we've run have really highlighted some interesting things. And a lot of these are based on, you know, what we call heuristics, or for a better word, sort of stereotypes of known behaviours or how a group will react.
Yeah.
But things like when we ran a test looking at national colours, typically in the Netherlands, making a button colour orange did actually have an uptick in conversion of people actually pressing that button. Interestingly, when we ran the same test for the German market, associating the button colours with those of the German national flag actually had a downtick in conversion. And there was obviously a bias against overt nationalism in the German market. However, what did resonate with that market was colours that symbolise what Germany is all about. So graphites and greys, and we think of, you know, Mercedes-Benz and efficiency, etc., and, you know, strong engineering background. Those actually resonated really well with those audiences. And although these are very sort of examples that we take in isolation, it just goes to show how different groups of people will react to different stimulus, particularly when it's formed around their culture.
There's also a couple of examples where companies have gone into those markets and they've addressed how people like to consume content. Everybody makes the stereotypical joke that Germans are very straight down the line and like things kind of as they are. And when McDonald's went into that marketplace, what they did with kind of the Big Mac marketing page was basically just had a picture of a Big Mac with a call to action button on it, rather than having lots of distractions and things, because for that market, it was very much about, here is a burger, come and have the burger.
Come and get the burger, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So that was a very different marketing tactic than when they went into the Japanese market. Because when they went into Japan, what they were doing was actually responding to the Japanese interest in having lots of interactions on a website. I'm sure you've been to a Japanese website and seen that there's just links.
Yes, one specific comes to mind, but I won't mention it.
they played to that market. So they had lots of widgets with games on them.
Oh, yes.
They had links to social feeds and all of those kind of things. So if you look at the two pages side by side, one is very clean and stripped back and the other one's just crazy manic. And that is a response to the individual cultural needs of those markets. And it works brilliantly.
Fascinating. I love the examples of the colour and the way that the different nationalities react to colour. Sort of chromopsychology. I don't know. Have I just made a word up? I don't know. Anyway, moving on. Can you give us some funny examples when it comes to sort of international audiences?
Yes, certainly. There's quite a few. Fortunately, none have come out of our staples in terms of the bloopers. Some of these are a little bit been twisted in folklore. I think we've seen the one about the Coke can meaning eat a wax tadpole, essentially, when they first launched into China. Again, I think that's got twisted through the annals of time. Certainly, you know, there are some that just come down to a little sort of ignorance of local culture. So when Colgate launched into France, this was quite a while ago, they brought out a new toothpaste called Q, which, again, unbeknownst to them, was also the name of quite a prominent porn mag. I think there was also one around Schweppes spending quite a bit about in an above-the-line campaign advertising toilet water, which perhaps not so much.
Well, guys, thank you so much for sharing your knowledge with us. How can our listeners find out more about you and more about Oban Digital?
You can find us at obandigital.com. Have a look at the website.
Or you can come through to our Twitter, which can be found at Oban Digital, and we regularly post updates about international marketing and some trends that we're seeing within the marketplaces. So it's a great place to get some new information.
So thanks for listening, everyone. You can find show notes at sitevisibility.com/impodcast. We're on iTunes and Stitcher, and we love reviews. And if you've got any questions, we have an email, podcast@sitevisibility.co.uk, and we have a telephone hotline if you want to leave an audio question or comment, +44 1273 256 150. So it's goodbye from me, Andy White. And it's goodbye from the good folks at OBAN.
Goodbye.
Bye.
And we'll see you next time on Internet Marketing.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.